is the Canucks Central Postgame Show.
It comes to Letang. He tried to pass the deflects back to the line for Dumoulin. Shot is blocked. Rebound. They score. Gensel from the right circle. Threw it to the net. It comes to Besser Levlin. Now to Ekman Larson as the power play expires. Ekman Larson shoots to the line. Tip. They score.
With the instant reaction from the players and coaches.
Letang in the line. To Crosby, right wing of the faceoff dot, into the slot for Gensel, shoots, he scores! That's the hat trick for Jake Gensel as he scores his second goal on the 5-on-3, his third of this second period, and the Penguins lead 3-1.
On the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks lose. Is it the low point of the season? Well, things can always get worse. Can't get much lower than jerseys on the ice from the fans and loud boos. This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, keeping you active on your feet for life on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Get your thoughts in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll free, 1-888-275-0650. It's Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. We're going to bring Corey Hirsch into the conversation here in a second for the post-game roundtable here. But, you know, we've been waiting for a moment, if one was going to come, at the rink where fans show their dissatisfaction. And we haven't really seen that a lot, right? Even though they had the homestand and lost a bunch of games, there were some scattered boos and chants here and there. But tonight, the fans made their voices heard pretty loud and clear late in the game. A lot of boos, chants, and also sweaters on the ice. And Hershey, as a former player, what reaction do you have when you see this type of scene at the arena?
Yeah, I mean, as a former player, it's like, I get it, fans are PO'd and all that, but a lot of good players wore that jersey, right? And I know essentially you don't, it's the team and the jersey and all that, but Sedin's wore that jersey, lots of great players. I don't see the point in it. I guess you want to make your statement and the fans and the media go, ooh, someone threw a jersey on the ice, right? We're all disappointed. All of us. We all thought that this was going to be a lot better year, but it's not. So, you know, we're all waiting for something to happen, but, you know, nothing may happen until the Canucks are officially eliminated. And that might be the right thing to do because you go make a knee-jerk reaction. This season ain't changing. So you might as well get in somebody that you want if you are going to make changes and be patient.
Now, when you see this reaction, though, how much more of this...
On the Dunbar text line?
Well, on the text line, but I'm saying at the rink. You know, that's a good. Well played, Hershey. But as far as, you know, I'm not talking about, you know, the changes aspect of things, but just as far as the environment.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they have so many home games left. And every loss, it seems like this type of feeling is going to fester more and more.
It'll be like this till the end of the year, until they make some changes. But you got L.A. coming in on Monday on a back-to-back. They're playing Edmonton Sunday night. And any time that a team has to play Edmonton the night before and has to play the Canucks, you know that they're going to be chasing Connor McDavid around. So that's good for the Canucks. That's a winnable game Monday. They should win that. And then after that, you know, if we look at the schedule and we look at December, they got a ton of home games, but you've got Boston coming in, you've got Winnipeg, you've got Carolina, Columbus plays hard. It doesn't get much easier, right? There's no really breaks in that schedule for them. So, now what do you do?
Well, that's a big question. And what does happen? It is a pregame roundtable brought to you by Avenue Machinery. Build your company to win with Kubota skid steers, excavators, and loaders. AvenueMachinery.ca. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar.
As far as on the ice, you know, one thing that Sat and I were talking about during the game is it looks so difficult. It just looks so difficult. Was tonight a product of how good Pittsburgh was playing to you, or was it just like this team doesn't connect a lot?
A little bit of both. Pittsburgh's tough to score on, a lot tougher than people think, because we all think of the Pittsburgh Penguins as these high scoring, right? Because they had all those years, they had all those players. Sidney Crosby isn't the Sidney Crosby he was 7 years ago.
He wins in different areas now.
Yeah, so he plays smarter.
Yeah.
He wins into, you're right, you said it perfectly, he wins in different areas, and he makes nice plays, but he's not the Crosby 7 years ago, so he plays better defensively, right? So, yeah, that's a very good defensive hockey club. Penalty kill at 91%, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
as far as for as bad as the Canucks are, Pittsburgh's on the other end of that for right how good they are. And then you got to beat the goalie. So Pittsburgh's they've done a nice job of putting a solid team together without having the star players that they've had in previous years. So give them credit, but also the Canucks. I mean, anytime it gets tough and they've got to kind of dig in and get to the front of the net, they just don't have, you know, they don't have that gumption to do it. They really struggle with that.
No, and that's the big problem. And Hershey, before we let you go here, as far as Thatcher Demko is concerned in his game, you know, he's battling hard, but how is it on a goalie when you see situations where your team's battling a little bit, but then when things kind of fall apart, it becomes you on an island. It was chance after chance, late.
Yeah.
This has happened a number of different times. For the psyche of a netminder like Thatcher Demko, how frustrating does that get?
Yeah, it sucks. I'm not going to lie, because he wants to win too. But what you have to do so that you don't fall into that rut, you just have to take solace in how well that you played yourself in your own game. Yes, you know, you want the team to win, and yes, you don't, you know, go home with a giant smile. Hey, guys, I played great, you know, like, but you have to know that inside, so that it doesn't eat you up, that you've played well, that you've continually played well, that you've given your team a chance, and that's all you can do. If you start as a goalie like Thatcher Demko, start blaming yourself, it'll eat you up really quick, and it'll affect your game on the ice. And if you're watching Hockey Night in Canada After Hours, Kelly and Elliot Friedman have color coordinated with.
They look like the Joker.
The purplish suits. Nice suits, not going to lie.
Looking dapper.
Yeah. Elliot's going for the 70s mobster kind of tough guy look.
Yeah, he does. He's kind of got the gangster vibes going.
Yeah.
But Hershey, always a pleasure, my friend. And we'll let you get on the way for the evening. And we look forward to chatting with you again. Well, on Monday, when the Canucks have another home game, extending this six-game homestand. So we look forward to that.
Who do the Browns play tomorrow?
The Browns have a bye week, so
they're not playing
this week.
So
yes.
They're resting.
So yes, so I don't have to get angry tomorrow.
It's a W tomorrow. Where are the standings?
Are they in the hunt?
The
race, they're 500. Yeah. It's off a chance.
Yeah.
I'm not as optimistic as I once was.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's life as a Cleveland Browns fan.
It's. I saw Cleveland Browns toque, actually, in, where was I? In Columbus. And I thought of you, and I thought about buying it for you. Then I didn't.
Then you didn't. Well, you thought better of it. Thanks, Hershey.
I thought $25 on a Browns toque, not a chance.
I don't like Sap that much. Thanks, Hershey.
All right, guys,
we'll talk
to
Hershey when the Canucks take on the Kings on home ice on Monday. Alex Edler's return.
Where he might score 101.
Right. He already has his 100th goal. So he's not going to get 100.
So maybe you don't need 100. To worry about a milestone goal being scored against you.
No.
If you want to be looking for silver linings right now, Alex Edler won't get a milestone goal versus the Canucks on Monday.
No doubt. No, definitely won't. Get your thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. Also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll free, 1-888-275-0650. This one says, y'all must have heard it. I think it's referring to the chants. Yes, it was very audible late in the game, the Fire Benning chants, and also the boos and the jerseys hitting the ice. It was very ugly late in the game. And, Bick, you and I were, you know, kind of listening to the crowd, and we're keeping an ear out on it. And you could faintly hear some stuff earlier in the game, but we kind of remarked and said, well, doesn't seem like they're too angry tonight. Maybe, you know, no real frustration coming out tonight. The fourth goal, it really changed all of a sudden. It seemed like there was a lot of apathy in the crowd. And then it got kind of nasty. So I think that's what a lot of people are referring to or here on the text inbox.
And people cleared out. People cleared out before. And that's why you and I said, okay, it's probably not going to happen tonight. And the building started to empty. And just based on the amount of people that were left in the arena, it didn't feel like it was going to happen. And then it got hostile. And then that fourth goal goes in. And then it got, you know, boos sprinkled in with the Fire Banning chants. And then obviously a very visual representation of their unhappiness and sweater on the ice. So what you expect to see when fans are asked to put up with a product that continually loses. And you don't address why they're losing.
Well, there hasn't been any accountability. And there's a lot of frustration about that. And it's very, very clear. A lot of reaction on the text inbox, 650-650. This team has no passion. That's why it's bad. Win streaks over. Fire everyone. Marcus and Gibson's.
Gabriel texting here. Longer this continues without change, ownership risks significantly damaging the team's brand. Absolutely must introduce a hockey operation structure in which Aquilini has no influence outside of writing the checks by hiring a seasoned president.
Yeah. So a lot of those texts coming in, and we'll keep reading your thoughts. A lot of texts here we'll get to as well, but let's go to the phone board. 604-280-0650 or toll-free 1-888-275-0650 as the Canucks lose yet again here on home ice against the Pittsburgh Penguins. Let's go to the phone boards. We have Daniel in Comox on the line. Daniel, thanks for calling in. What do you have for us tonight?
It's not good news, boys, but I've done a little bit of math, and so with 57 games remaining, to hit 96 points, which is a low bar, the Canucks need 39 wins, and they can only lose 17 more games to hit 96 points. So
you're already counting it down, pretty much. That's what's going on. And, you know, that's another way to look at it. How many more losses can you kind of take? And, honestly, I don't really like talking about the whole playoff thing. I'll respond to people texting about it. I'll respond to people calling in about it. They've dug such a hole that, to me, there's no meaningful conversation to be had about making a playoff push. Like, we can talk about trending in a better direction, playing better, and systems changing, and seeing the best out of players. And we haven't seen the best of Pettersson. We're not seeing the best of Brock Besser. We're not seeing the best of Horvat consistently. And that's a big problem. When you have your best players not being at their best consistently, well, your team's going to struggle in a big, big way. But all I want to see is Elias Pettersson look like Elias Pettersson at some point. All I want to see is Brock Besser look like Brock Besser at some point. Forget the playoffs. Forget winning hockey games. How about the future of the core? How about what these guys ultimately will be and how you get the most out of them? Can you get the most out of them? What's gone wrong here when your two best promising young players are playing as poorly as they are? Pettersson, a bit better tonight. Like, he looked more engaged. I mean, this is not the same Brock Besser. We were talking about Brock, and in his rookie season, he could shoot the puck really well. But now, what does he do really well? What's the one thing you can point out in Brock Besser's game? Because the shot certainly doesn't seem to be there. The playmaking's not really there. You know, you're not this elite two-way player. I think he's been fine as an overall player, but fine's not good enough. Everything is fine. Everything's okay. I mean, they were fine, Bic. They were fine at evens tonight. They were fine defensively. But they're not good enough to win hockey games because their best players aren't their best players. And the other guys are supposed to be support players. They're not good enough either. And you're not getting answers out of anybody.
No, it's bad. And Brock Besser especially is a ghost. Just a shadow of what we've seen in years past. Like, he gets an assist tonight. Again, that goal to me was more created by OEL and Vasily Podkolzin. And by and large, kind of a pedestrian performance. Not kind of, it was a pedestrian performance. Just, you know, for what you're talking about there is, what is the one thing he excels at? You know, when he wasn't scoring two seasons ago, you and I, many others in the market, as far as media, were saying, hey, he's doing this, he's doing this. You're not even seeing that anymore, as far as being engaged on the walls, winning in that area, being proactive defensively, or being able to recycle possession.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see any of that. And then, you know, he's never been elite defensively. He's not a Mark Stone or a Tarasenko on the wings, but he filled a need with some offensive production. Well, if you're not really doing that, then you're invisible. You're absolutely invisible, and it's such a drain on their 5-on-5 play. Elias Pettersson, again, to me, I thought was one of the better forwards tonight, not on Connor Garland's level or anything like that, but you can't just be better than what you have. You've got to be better than the opposition. And it's not exactly a high bar to cross to be better than what your teammates are doing right now. Because there's a lot of people that are being passengers, are just being passengers on this group right now.
A lot of reaction, a lot of texts come in. Canuck J says, been a fan since 1970. The chants, the boos, the jerseys thrown on ice. This has been a dark day in Vancouver sports. I'm very upset about this. What is next? I think we're all trying to figure out what is next. Marcus and Gibson's, usually teams only get hangovers after the cup, not after last place season, but that's what it looks like. Justin in Cancun, move the team to Cancun so you guys can be happy. Vancouver Bluntstones don't deserve a hockey team. I mean, I will defend fans. Now, am I pro throwing stuff on the ice? I'm not. I'm not pro throwing anything on the ice, be it a jersey or whatever it is. I'm not pro doing that. But as far as voicing your dissatisfaction, fans are allowed to voice your opinions, and especially fans that pay to show up. And let's be honest, they were promised better this season. And there hasn't been a lot of success over 8 years.
And hang on, let's even be even more honest. They weren't even promised a lot. They were promised playoffs.
Yes.
Forget cups. And I made this point. When you lower expectations to playoffs, your outrage should even be heightened because they're not going to meet that bar. That's a big issue. That 25 games in, we're talking about lost seasons already.
Yeah, I'm here to talk about, hey, fans perhaps behaving better here and there. I understand that sort of stuff. But this whole notion of fans here don't deserve to have a team because they're upset about what's going on. Win!
Yeah.
If you're having success and fans are unhappy and they're not showing up and they're being angry about things, you have a right to mention it. But when you've been promised better, you've hoped for better, you waited for better, you've stuck through for better, and you're not seeing better, and you're a consumer who's paying money and time and effort.
I was just going to say, are you
just allowed
expected?
You're allowed to voice your opinion, man, whatever that is. Now, there's a line you shouldn't cross. Absolutely. Again, I'm not pro throwing anything on the ice, but fans are allowed to voice their opinions. They're allowed to express their dissatisfaction. And if you're paying a ticket to come and show up and watch this and the games haven't been as good and entertaining as they should be, yeah, you're allowed to voice your dissatisfaction.
I was just going to say, at what point do you just sit there and wait to get bled out to say, hey, I'm still going to show up and support and spend my money? You can't just draw your fan base dry to say, this is okay. This is okay, because it's not. Being this record right now, it's not. They were told it was going to get better, and it's a far cry from even average.
Yeah, a lot of reaction. Definitely a Benning problem. Dickinson, Pullman, and Burrows, terrible. The Canucks are like spoiled milk. Why am I still drinking this? And that's one text coming in. And Tracy, however, says, some Vancouver fans and media don't deserve to have a hockey team anymore. We need to pump this team up. It's our duty to promote, encourage this team. Any fan booing or throwing their jersey on the ice isn't a team player should cheer for another team. It's time to support this team since they need true fans right now. Anyone who is booing or calling for someone's job should challenge themselves to be a better fan. That is Tracy. Now, I don't begrudge fans for having the tribal mentality. You can fan any way you want. I know a lot of fans are like, they're ride or die. No matter what, they're going to defend and be there for the team. I get it. But not every fan's the same. And every fan is different with how they view things. And I'm not a big gatekeeper here. So you got to act this way. You got to act that way. Media's job is to give you an objective analysis about what's going on with as much fairness and honesty as possible. At least that's how we try to approach things, Bick, you and myself. But, you know, it's not the media's job to pump up the team and be like, come on, guys. Fans, hey, you can fan any way you want. You want to support them, go right ahead. You want to be angry about it, well, you also have a right to voice your opinion in that sense as well. 604-280-0650, your toll free, 1-888-275-0650. We'll get to calls, but here's head coach Travis Green.
Travis, what did you think of the penalty on Tyler Motte?
Yeah, I didn't think it was a penalty. I don't know if I thought Letang sold it a little bit. I watched it a few times. Obviously, a big part of the game. We battle back to make it 1-1, and then things unravel with the 5-on-3s.
Do you find yourself thinking about that post that Petey hit? I mean, that would have made it 2-1.
Yeah, a little bit. We had a little momentum going there.
It's 25 games in, and you know about your penalty killing. We ask you every day. Yeah. Do you have the personnel, do you think, that can make a significant difference in? Yeah,
I think we've made improvements in the penalty kill. I mean, I in the last 4 or 5 games, so when you get 2 goals scored against you on 5-on-3s, it's, you know, you're not, they're power play goals, but it's different than where we've been hurting, I guess, or not playing well in our penalty kill.
But you do, like, you think you've got the personnel that...
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's what we have here, so...
One of the things you said after the Boston game was that their top players got it done. Tonight, again, it's Gensel, Letang, Crosby getting their points and goals. Mm-hmm. Did you get enough from your top players tonight?
If you're asking me to call our top guys, I'm not going to do that, so... Obviously, their top guys had a good night, so... It's easy to say our top guys didn't get points tonight. I get that. We've done a lot of talking about that as well. I'm not going to continue to do it on a night like tonight.
What frustration, I mean, you can see why you guys might be frustrated late in the second there.
Yeah.
Garland takes a misconduct.
Again, like, I mean, when a team is, when that happens, I think it's up to the refs to settle it down. I don't think they needed to give Garley a 10 there for, I barely recognized what he even did. I think he banged the bench with his stick twice.
He didn't say anything as far as you know. It's just.
Travis, obviously Pittsburgh's a fast team up front.
Yeah.
That sort of seems to be a bit of a trend where teams with that forward speed giving you guys trouble this season. Why do you think that you guys have struggled against teams with speed?
Well, quick teams are hard to play against. You got to have defensemen that can make a lot of plays, and even when you have a lot of offensive or good puck moving D, that's why Pittsburgh's they're effective with their game. They have quick forwards, they're on top of you. I thought we struggled with it a little bit, but we battled back in the game. It could have easily been 2-1, and obviously those 5-on-3s played a big part of the game.
In before the 5-on-3s, can you just touch on what the earlier penalties do to your 5-on-5 flow? I mean, JT takes the 2 tripping calls, even though the thing was going to score.
Yeah.
There are major
you're never going to go a game without taking penalties. Would Millsy like to have those back? I thought the one for sure in the defensive zone to get, penalties are going to happen. You're never going to go a game without taking penalties. We get unlucky on the one that goes over the glass. Obviously, we break 2 sticks or 3 sticks on the penalty kill, and Mizey would probably like to have his one back.
The other impact, though, is you're overworking certain guys. Other guys are staying on the bench and are unavailable for that stretch of time. So that's
well, you don't see many periods where you take that many penalties, like I said.
I know you said you're not going to call out your best players, but you also often talk about sort of honest assessment. It's been 13 games for Brock without a goal, and he's a volume shooter, and it's another night with just 2 shots on goal. His shot totals are, sort of middle of the pack on this team. Where is his overall game?
Yeah, I think, with Brock, he's the guy that has to produce for us, and he knows that. He's trying, he's working, hasn't gone for him. He's got to continue to work.
Travis, you heard the reaction of the crowd at the end of the game there. What does that do for you and your team to...
When you lose, it's hard. I get it. People get frustrated. We get frustrated too. Our players, they're mad when they lose. Coaches are upset when they lose as well.
You mentioned the post that Elias hit. He had another chance in the slot there. Is it encouraging that he is getting to those areas and getting the puck in those areas?
Yeah, it is.
Thank you.
That is Canucks head coach Travis Green after a loss on home ice against the Pittsburgh Penguins. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar on the Canucks Central postgame show presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics. Do your feet hurt? Kintec can help. Talk to a fitting expert today at 11 Lower Mainland locations or online at kintec.net. Grab a phone line 604-280-0650 or toll free 1-888-275-0650. And Bick, the coach is obviously not going to go after his top players. He made that very clear, saying he's not going to go after them. But when asked about his personnel and what he has to work with to get out of this, a very telling answer.
We have what we have.
We have what we have. Do you have what it takes? Do you have the personnel to get better? We have what we have.
Yeah, and again, I do look at this team. I look at the individual players. And do I think this is the 30th best collection of talent in the NHL? I don't. I think it's probably more closer to 18 and 19, and it's up until it's upon everyone to extract more out of each other to put yourself in that conversation of 13th and 10th and around that area. But when it doesn't, you look like you're the 30th best team. And should they be this bad? No, they really shouldn't. But it just feels like there's so much scar tissue of, this loss bleeding into this loss and the next loss, that even coming off of 2 wins, how the expectation should be you have some confidence. And I got to be honest, the result never looked in doubt tonight.
No, it didn't.
Never looked like the Canucks were going to win this
game. We were talking after the first period, Bick. It was 0-0. And Yeah, it was encouraging that it was scoreless. And we talked about how the Canucks, for the most part, defensively weren't breaking down. They were in the game, but they weren't generating anything. And if they were going to have any chance of being in this hockey game, they're going to have to be better than they were in this first period. That's as close as they got when they were still the second-best team in the first period. And we can talk about the calls. Sure, the call on Mott, which we both discussed and didn't quite like as much. Travis also didn't like that call on Mott. But the other penalties were mistakes. Pullman gets the puck out. Delay a game penalty. Some bad luck, perhaps, but that happened. That's a call. Tyler Myers, maybe unlucky, but he covers the puck with his hand. What are you supposed to do? That's a call. It's an obvious call. So outside of one call, which costs you, the rest kind of went against you, but you didn't play well enough to deserve a better fate. It's not fair to say they deserved a better fate, or had the officials done something differently, you would have won this hockey game. Because even if they don't call that penalty on Mott, do you doubt the outcome of this game? I sure don't, based on how these two teams were playing for the most part. We have time to get to the phone boards here. We are going to keep taking your calls and your text messages to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. Let's go to Raj in Surrey. Raj, thanks for calling in. What do you have for us tonight?
Hey, guys. I love the show. What I was just going to say is that it's brutal how low production we have from Besser, Horvat, and Pedersen this year. Mm-hmm. I think it's really biting the team, and I think Quinn Hughes has a hard time, you know, creating two or three goals a game. And I just want to quickly talk about the jersey on the ice. I think a couple of years ago, an Edmonton Oilers fan threw their jersey on the ice, and I remember watching the Canada-Russia 72 series and how the Canadian fans booed Team Canada then. I think, you know, if during celebration you can throw hats on the ice, I think when it's going this bad, I know there's a factor of, you know, hurting the players on the ice, throwing the objects on the ice. You know, it's difficult, but I think one jersey on the ice, it's not that bad. And, you know, Jeff, if you're Jeff Cowan, it's another article of clothing, but that's all about it.
Thanks for the phone call. And, man, he's right.
Yeah, again.
Ultimately, it comes down to your best players, and they're not your best players. And there's a lot more here, too, right? I mean, you know, there's so much here to discuss. Like,
I really wish it was just one thing we could focus on.
But there's
on
so
that.
Much. It's the players. You can talk about the moves that have been made. You can talk about Travis, the coaching staff, team direction. All of these, like, everything they've done has accumulated to this moment right now, and nothing is working. And the only thing working is, like, Connor Garland, Thatcher Demko doing everything he can, OEL being solid, Hughes being good. And then Tyler Mott hustling. But that's it. I mean, we talk about Luke Shen. You know, somebody texted and called us out. It's like, you guys spend like 10 minutes talking about Luke Shen and a fourth liner and Tyler Mott.
Yeah.
Call us homers. And I'm like, well, and I thought about it. I'm like, well, you know, we did spend 10 minutes talking. But those are the only bright spots.
Yeah.
Like, we're sitting here talking about bright spots and positive things. We try to give you the full picture. But what does it say when two of the biggest positives we're pointing out are depth players? You know, and God bless Mott and Shen. I like both those guys, right? And they're doing good. Give them credit.
But you were getting max output out of those guys, and it's barely moving the needle.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. And I see we're getting texts in here of call up DiGiuseppe and Lockwood and Rathbone. That's all well and good. And look, you can do that. It might be better than these guys. How much are they going to actually move the needle? That's the issue. The issue is still Elias Pettersson, not good enough. Brock Besser, not good enough. Tanner Pearson. Okay, you were part of that goal. I think that goal ultimately will get credited to him. So that's something. Nils Höglander, not good enough. This is 1.9 games for Nils Höglander now. Again, he works hard. That's all cool, but not producing. Bo Horvat, not producing. Not good enough. It just, you go through it, and your top eight forwards are non-existent. And no matter what Luke Shen and Connor Garland or guys on the bottom of their roster, Tyler Mott, or even anyone else you want to see brought up from Abbotsford, they're not going to move the needle unless your star players are your star players.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what it is. Get your thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. Grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. We'll get back to more of your reaction after the Canucks lost 4-1 at home against the Penguins as the Canucks Central postgame show rolls on, presented by Kintech Footwear and Orthotics. And the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Now, more more of the Kintec Footwear and Orthotics Canucks postgame show. Join the discussion. Text us at 650-650 or call us at 604-280-0650. This is the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Blocked by Horvat as it hit him in the skate. And now McGinn shoots for the empty net. It goes wide. No icing again, and now you can hear those chants clearly.
It's no secret we heard the frustration from the fans tonight. And again, we look ourselves in the mirror, find a way, because we do owe it to more people than just ourselves to put a better product together.
Tyler Mott, very honest. Time to look ourselves in the mirror.
They need a new mirror.
They do.
Because whatever, mirror, mirror on the wall, why are you lying to us all? That's what's happening.
Oh, wow. What a line. What a line. Close it up. Hey, you know what? We always show up on the postgame show. That's one thing. Look, the effort on the postgame show, it's always there.
I've heard that mirror line like three times this year. So whatever mirror they're looking at, change it.
You know what it is? I find it funny because I ranted about this exact same thing last year. Remember when JT Miller was like, you know, he was so good in the postgame,
yeah.
so passionate. I'm like, stop talking.
Yeah.
You guys have said this so many different times. We know we got to be better. We know we got to do this. We got to dig deep, yada, yada. Then do it.
Yeah, and look.
Bring it.
To be fair, Tyler Mott.
Well, he was giving effort, yeah.
Like, you're just putting it in a quote. I get it. And it's not necessarily about Tyler Mott. It's about the team on its whole. They've said that mirror line before. And, okay, cool. I feel like I keep saying that, okay, cool. If you recognize that there's a problem, why aren't you doing anything about it? And too often, guys are on the wrong side of the puck.
Yeah.
Should you not have known that you're on the wrong side? I thought you were looking in the mirror.
No, I know. But here's the thing, too. Because when you're watching other teams defend and how they play their system, oftentimes what they do is where they try to lead you to go, right? How they shade you a certain way, how to try to get leverage on you, right? Which angles they give you to get you in spots where they don't feel like you're dangerous or you're a threat against them. The Canucks play straight up a lot, where it's like literally straight up. And there isn't, at least there doesn't seem like there is a plan to shade anybody to a certain type of area. There isn't. It doesn't really seem like there is.
It's hoping to win a lot of individual battles.
Right. And these guys aren't good enough at doing that. And they don't play cohesive enough as far as the team play to actually be a good structured team. So you see at times they're okay defensively, and other times, well, they're not. Because like you said, if each guy isn't winning their individual matchup, everything else falls apart. And yes, part of it is in hockey, one guy falls apart, that's how it goes. But if you play a system where you rely on your positioning as opposed to you winning your matchup all the time,
there are constant pathways to the net.
Now,
not even just on the puck,
right?
For guys off of the puck. Case in point, that Sidney Crosby goal. Look, Tucker Poolman pins him on the board.
Mm-hmm.
And the puck squirts free, goes out. But Tucker Poolman has him on the board. And, hey, it's Sidney Crosby. He's going to wiggle free. And when he does, it's just between Crosby and Demko. There's no one even close to cutting off that path. And he accelerates away from Tucker Poolman, who is trying his hardest, but he's never going to close that gap. And it's just, it's a tap-in.
No, and you know, as far as the discipline goes, there was a play in the first period from Bo Horvat. This is the captain of the team. It was the 4-on-4 shift. It's Garland with Horvat, Hughes, and Myers. The puck ends up going back in transition after the Canucks lose a draw in the offensive zone. Bo Horvat is closer to the red line than Connor Garland is. Who beats who, do you think, to the front of the Canucks net on that transition chance? Connor Garland by a mile. Bo Horvat, way too slow to get back into play. It's just early in a 4-on-4 shift. Why aren't you skating back hard? And then when he does come back, instead of getting behind in front of the attackers, he goes behind the attackers trying to get sprung potentially for a breakaway going the other way. What happens? The puck doesn't get to him. Another high danger chance gets created by the Penguins because now all of a sudden they have a 4-on-3 down low. That's your captain choosing to not backcheck hard enough and choosing to look for the cherry-picked pass instead of doing what's right defensively. That's not a standard that you can follow for the rest of the team. That's not good enough. We can talk about Pettersson not being good enough. That moment by Bo's not good enough. And we can talk about coaches not getting answers. You want to talk about Benning? Well, a lot of people are talking about Jim Benning as well, and you heard the chants as well, and even ownership is getting dragged on the Dunbar Lumber text inbox. And Bix, before we go to the phone lines, what is going on the Dunbar Lumber text inbox?
Mason, age 13, from Langley, says, so frustrating throughout the entire game. We need a change or else they are going to start to lose the fans and players won't resign here in Vancouver. Anthony, an East fan, we're talking about the jersey on the ice earlier. He says the jersey on the ice is about the organization, not just the players. Unsigned team has no pride. CP says Miller is producing, but does so many bad things, turnovers, bad passes, penalties, and hogs the puck when he is triple teamed and often loses it. As productive as he is, I think he does more harm than good. What do you think? That is from CP. For me, JT Miller, the only guy consistently going.
Yeah.
It's basically him and Connor Garland.
Yeah.
As far as effort matches production. Hoglander puts in a lot of effort, but, you know, it's been 1.9 games now.
Yeah.
But Miller and Garland, to me, put Colson, I should also say, has started to emerge.
Yeah. Well, for a rookie, he's doing, in the limited role, is doing the best he can.
It's essentially, those are your three best forwards.
Yeah.
By quite a margin. And Horvat would probably be fourth. And I think I've made my feelings known about Bo Horvat's play this year.
Yeah, and that's not a fourth in a good spot.
No,
no.
So then I don't even know where to rank Brock Besser or Elias Pettersson in that conversation.
Stop me if you heard me say this before. Not good enough.
Yeah,
that's essentially what it is. Let's go back to the phone board. 604-280-0650 or toll free 1-888-275-0650. Let's go to Brad in Whistler, who's on the line. Brad, thanks for calling in. And what do you have for us tonight?
Hey, boys, it's great to be back on the air again. I just want to cut right to it because I know it's prime time. I got a bunch of post-it notes written out.
Attaboy.
Yeah, I just want to get my thoughts clear. And the number one thing I really want to point out, like, this isn't about the product on the ice for me. This is about what's happening up above. And I go back to the spring when Jim Benning talked about the two-year plan. And then a few months later, they about face and mortgage more of the future for Larson and Garland. And of course, they've been good. But how did those two players opening up to be available in trade all of a sudden switch the entire apparent plan? I mean, going back to the beginning of the Benning era, you know, he's just been bleeding draft picks all over the place. He even threw in the extra pick, the Cassian for Prust, seconds for Vey and Sven Berchi. Although, you know, he was all right in a Canuck uniform for a while, but he was billed as the drafting guy, and his drafting record actually hasn't been that bad. I called in and said this on a post game about a year ago as well, and you know, the drafting hasn't been that bad, but I just find it ironic that tonight the Penguins are in town and Brian Burke is in town. And I just can't help but think about the glory days of the franchise when there was this leadership from above that was talking about the importance of the Canucks in the community and work with Canuck Place and just being a good citizen. And now we don't hear any of that. There's no true leadership. It goes up to ownership. And I just want to close on this. My accountant is taking me to the game on Monday, and I'm excited to see Edler, and I'm going to cheer him on. But a buddy of mine asked me if I want to go to a game early in the year, and no one wants to be at the rink more than me. Like, I know the players are trying, but I told my buddy that they got to earn my money, and truly they haven't. I'm not interested in going to the rink. It's near paper bag time.
I got it. Hey, Brad, thanks so much for the call. Good run there. I totally understand the point you're getting across. And nothing he said was untrue.
That's why we let him go on.
Yeah. I mean, nothing he said was untrue.
Just don't lie to us, that's all.
Yeah, just don't lie to us.
You can say whatever you want. Just don't lie to us.
Just don't lie to us. Yeah, exactly. But that's where this, you know, if you are promised better and you are given timelines and you don't meet them, you know, and as far as leadership goes, I think the best point about everything is leadership. Yeah. And I do find it fascinating, and this, I guess, happens in other markets, and I'm not quite sure if it happens to this degree. Now, sidebar, we'll go really quickly. Sidebar really quickly. If you think that things like this don't happen in other markets, I got something to tell you. They threw jerseys on the ice after making changes in Montreal earlier, just a few days ago. That happened. This happened to Edmonton, like a caller Raj mentioning when he called in a bit earlier. The amount of vitriol that gets thrown at organizations in Europe when soccer, it's mind-blowing.
In the NFL.
So let's just say, I'm not trying to say it's good to throw jerseys on the ice. Again, I don't condone anything being thrown on the ice. I don't like that, right? You want to boo and you want to chant, hey, that's up to you. You're well within your rights. I don't like people throwing anything on the ice. That's just my opinion on stuff. But you can voice your dissatisfaction. And I'm not saying it's a positive thing. It's a toxic environment. That happens after you lose a lot. But these things happen to far worse degrees around sports. It's not a unique thing to Vancouver, necessarily.
No, it's absolutely not. But and by the way, like, everyone that works for this organization is very aware that this can happen. Like, these are grown adults.
Yeah.
They're paid very handsomely. They're very aware that if they don't win, fans will turn on them. Everyone accepts that.
Yeah.
Now, to what level and to what line do you cross and all that sort of stuff? It's don't make it personal. That's all that anyone really asks. But every coach is aware that they got hired to get fired. Every GM is aware they got hired to get fired. Every player is aware they might get traded or they might not live up to their standard or fans will boo them. Everyone knows what the game is. So don't worry about hurting their feelings. They're in this for glory as well. And the opposite of that is pain.
And now that's what they're feeling. And to the point that Brad made about leadership, and I do think that in this market, though, people do go back to the old guys too much. Like the whole bring Gillis back, right? Bring Brian Burke back. It's always the guy who's already been here. That's a very romantic thing. I do think it's kind of unique to Vancouver because I don't see that happen elsewhere. But I do think it's very fair to point out the leadership void. And at least a forward facing leader of the organization as far as the messaging goes and how the organization is perceived, right? And the things that Brad pointed out, it's true. They haven't had a good communicator in place since Brian Burke, essentially. Like, even Gillis had a hard time. He kind of, but, you know, they were having success, so it was an easier way to sell it. And when Lyndon was here, at least he was a likable guy that people connected to. But without him here, that, you know, voice and that communication isn't there with the fans and with the organization, at least from a management perspective. Let's go back to the phone board, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. Let's go to Maple Ridge, where Johnny Canuck is on the line. Johnny, thanks for calling in. What do you have for us tonight?
Hey, good evening, guys. How you doing?
Doing well, man. What you got?
Well, I was at the game, and I just want to say that I honestly don't know what to do to fix it, but the lack of effort out there was so visible between these guys in Pittsburgh. Like, it was absolutely ridiculous. And I don't even remember the last game that I actually saw us finish a body check where you actually felt like, ooh, that hurt. And I think that's the start of it. Even Mott, Garland, like, those guys are out there skating. Same with Hoglander. But you could see all of them ease up against the boards. And I just don't understand. I don't know what to do. The other piece of it is every single penalty kill, and I know you've talked about it to death over the last few games, but we lose every single draw to start the PK.
Yeah.
And it bites us. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand how there's not somebody in Abbotsford that can actually win faceoffs on a PK that isn't called up. Like, it just shocks me that that's not a minimum move you could do. Or if I'm green, I walk up to Benning and say, I need to fire our PK coach. Obviously, our results are the worst in the league. So,
you got it. Hey, thanks for the phone call, Johnny. I appreciate you calling in. And, you know, the whole penalty kill thing, you can blame the coaches on stuff too. The personnel thing is an issue. And the Canucks haven't been able to find an answer.
They have what they have.
They have what they have. That is what Travis Green said. And I do believe that it has been brought to Jim's attention that they need a left-handed defenseman or somebody that can help out in situations, and they haven't been able to find that person. And that player doesn't exist in Abbotsford, believe it or not, because if they did, they'd be up here right now. And that's the problem. And you know, the thing is, the Canucks did do a good job of building out depth this year as far as, you know, tweener guys that can kind of come in and play for you, but not the kind of guys they needed. There's no left-hand defenseman that can kill penalties. There's no right-handed centerman that's a depth player that can help you out. There's no guy in the minors that's good at winning draws that can play on the PK for you. Those things, they didn't get depth in. They got depth in guys that can play, you know, some even strength minutes for you if guys go down in certain roles, but not guys that can do a special role for you. And right now, that is really biting them.
And to the caller's point, they used to be much worse at this. When I tracked this earlier in the year, their shorthanded faceoff percentage is now 43.6%. It used to be closer to the 20s.
Yeah.
And so they've been better recently, but it's still obviously much below average.
Yes, absolutely. This text, I find it hard to believe that six players are underachieving because Benning gave Erickson a bad contract. Please explain. And, I mean, you can't say that that move in and of itself causes these guys to underachieve. I think the overall point here is the lack of extra assets and the lack of flexibility after all these years puts the team in a position where they can't find answers when they need them. So I think that's the overall point. And I get it that the fans kind of, you know, will position things in a way that is out of context, and it is kind of unfair to say that problem is causing this, but it's the accumulation of things you've done and your vision changing and mistakes being made and high bets being made that did not pay off that you're now in a position where it's very difficult for you to get out of it. So you had to go and make a trade where you're trading Roussel, Beagle, and Erickson, expiring contracts worth $12 million and a first-round pick and a second-round pick to get Garland and OEL. And those are good players. They're helping you out. They're doing their roles. Now, OEL's not being productive enough, but he's playing good minutes for you. But you had to do a move like that because you had your back up against the wall. And now the Canucks are in a position where they don't have extra draft picks. They don't have a second-round pick this year because they traded it in the trade they already made. They're capped out. So they don't have anything they can do to add to their roster.
Not a lot of prospects to look forward to either.
No, I mean, Rathbone's coming and Klimovich is there, but there isn't a ton of other guys kind of coming up that are ready to go. So there isn't a lot coming. So it's really difficult for you to find answers right now, and that's why the team is having a hard time. So that's the overall point when people point to Erickson and some of the trades and mistakes that have been made in the past. It's the accumulation of them that now have you in a position where you're facing the issue you're facing. Let's go back to the phone board, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. Let's go to Don and Bella Bella, who's on the line. Don, thanks for hanging in there. What do you have for us tonight?
Oh, hey there. Thanks. I really liked that call from Brad earlier, but I just wanted to add, you know, Green is telling them to stay out of the box when he's getting ready for a game, but Miller, Mott, and Myers were very undisciplined. Mott deserved that penalty. That was awful in the corner there. Miller was lazy at the blue line, and Myers closing his hand on the puck and on and on. My whole point, the players aren't listening to this coach. And, you know, like, I'll watch these games on TV, but I will not pay to go to a game. Thank you.
Thanks for the phone call. That is Don and Bella Bella. And, I mean, he's not wrong about the lack of discipline. And I can see how the Mott thing is justifiable because the league is cracking down on those cross-checks. Now, it doesn't get called consistently. You can totally say it's inconsistently called, and I totally get it. But there is a way, players in a vulnerable position, all that sort of stuff. Given, like you mentioned, it wasn't a hard tap, and Mott's arms were already extended, and it seemed like Letang embellished it there. I don't love the call, but I do see how you can see it as an actual penalty, and given the crackdown, how you can justify given that call. But the rest, he's right. A lot of undisciplined penalties tonight, too, by the Canucks.
Yeah, and, you know, they've had games where they've not taken a lot of penalties, and early in the season, they were very, very good at drawing them versus giving up penalties, and that's what made the power play frustrations so hard and the penalty kill frustrations so difficult and obvious of, you know, you can't keep shooting yourself in the foot when you have this differential in your favor. And now, you know, these things even out over the course of a season. now they're getting the whistle against them. As that happens, because, well, you're not skating hard enough. You don't have the puck in dangerous areas to force opponents to have their sticks in dangerous spots to draw penalties. All this stuff collapses onto itself, and it all just goes back to bigger picture conversations. Do you play fast enough? Can you play fast enough? Do you have the players to play fast enough? Do you have the talent available to you? Why don't you have the talent available to you? It's all these things stem back to bigger picture items of,
yeah,
what's the talent available on this team, and how's the roster been constructed? What are the resources available to the general manager? Like, every small detail that's happening on the ice, you can link it to a bigger picture question. And I don't even think as a stretch to fit a narrative.
Yeah, no.
When you're failing this much, everything has to be examined.
Everything deserves to be examined, and there's a simple truth. Your players, your best players, aren't good enough right now.
The other simple truth is nobody is set up to succeed right now in the organization.
No, that's true, right? And that's an issue. And at the same time, the professionals are not playing as good as they're supposed to be playing. And that's why we say it's a very complex situation, because nothing is really going your way except for the goalie department, like you've outlined many times, Bick.
Yeah.
And
sorry, I should say nobody's – the goalie department is being set up to succeed.
Yes, yes. That is the one department that is excelling.
And even then, it's like superhuman efforts by Thatcher Demko. Yeah. Like, it's 4-1 tonight.
It could have been worse.
It could have been worse.
It could have been worse. It really could have been worse, especially late in that game. All right, let's go back to the phone boards. We go to Richmond, where Ryan is on the line. Ryan, thanks for calling in. What do you have for us tonight?
Hey, guys. I was at tonight's game. Just a couple observations. And I would like to focus on the coaching. There's a couple plays that I thought is really odd. I don't know why we keep on passing to the back right point every single time we're in the offensive zone. That's the first comment. Second comment is just comparing the power plays. For example, Crosby, and I also saw this when I watched Ovechkin play with Capitals against us a few years ago. They're always moving. Like, Crosby was on the left side, then he moved to the center, the back, and he's on the right side. They're always moving. Our power play doesn't move. So I actually think this is an issue of coaching, because if it's so predictable, obviously the other team can predict what we're going to do. That's it. Thanks.
All right. Thanks for the phone call. And they are very predictable on the power play. And for a team that has that much talent, they don't generate enough opportunities. And there are moments where it's really good. Like, there are flashes, and we see a few games when it is good. And that is why the power play still is middle of the table. Like, they're ranked 16th coming into tonight's game, because they have enough talent that they're going to have some really nice moments. But they are very predictable. And when you take the Pettersson one-timer away, you take the Bo Horvat slot chance away, there isn't a lot else that happens. And it is essentially get it to the point and get a shot through and hope something happens.
So I've mentioned this a lot for basically 2 years now, of their 5-on-5 plays, essentially get it to the half wall, back to the point, and shoot it. So Ryan's not wrong. It looks like that happens often. So I tracked it, and I tried to find the data of shot by distance, and the Canucks rank, coming into tonight, rank 26th of where they are shooting from in all strengths. So it was 37 feet away, which is 26th in the league. And you look at the teams that are best at it, it's Tampa, it's Toronto, it's the teams that are trying to pass the puck into the net, essentially.
Yeah.
And they have the horses and the creativity to do it. Vancouver deliberately chooses to pass the puck and shoot from distance.
Yeah.
That's how they're playing. Your eyes are not deceiving you as far as, oh, they don't get to the tough areas. No, they're not shooting from tough areas. They're trying to get bodies into the tough areas, but they're deliberately shooting from distance. Your eyes aren't deceiving you. And by the way, if you're wondering, you know, which teams are also the worst at this, it's not just about Vancouver being poor. The other teams around them, Phoenix, Philly, Buffalo, San Jose.
Not great teams for the most part.
You want to score, get the puck near the net.
Yeah. I mean, good teams shoot from closer. It's as simple as that. And the Canucks just don't. And a lot of that is instructive. That's why it is fair to talk about strategy. That is why it's fair to talk about systems, right? And that is why, yet again, a lot of things can be pointed to. when the Canucks struggle this much and you see these many things go wrong for this team. This one says, stop saying we have so much talent when it's not clearly there, Sat. And hey, it's fair to say that, but there are talented players underperforming. That's the truth. These are talented players underperforming, and that's a big, big issue right now. Because they are better than this. They should be better than this. At least I believe so. Like, I refuse to believe that these players all of a sudden had their talent vanish to never appear again, especially for Pettersson and Besser. But it is absolutely killing this team right now that those two players in particular aren't as good as they need to be. Let's go back to the phone boards. We go to Earl in Mission. Earl, can you bring some positivity to things here? Is this why you're calling?
Yeah,
more?
Yeah, okay. I can. Cause
all right.
If you guys can find me that Horvat jersey, I'll get Horvat to sign it, and I'll get him, and I'll be wearing it when he lifts the cup. You know, so find me that jersey. I'll wear it as a dedicated fan. Anyways, PK, last year I told you guys that we had the best four penalty killers in the league, which was Beagle, Sutter, Edler, Myers, and, of course, Demko, the fifth. Holtby was great, too. So PK is missing a few players, and that's one of our problems. Edler's going to be in town on Monday.
Okay.
And, you know, this decline that we've had has been since Edler got so mistreated by what I consider the organization. So this is an ownership issue. There's no way that he shouldn't be retiring here in Vancouver and still playing here. So all of the players saw that happen at his age. And, you know, this is karma biting Aquilini because of not keeping him here.
Hey, yeah, thanks for the phone call, Earl. I appreciate you calling in. And, you know, as far as Alex Edler is concerned, whether he was mistreated or not, it's hard for me to say, but I do know the Canucks made him an offer, and Edler's agent also came out and said it was a fair offer. Edler just chose to go to LA. Now, what that says or why that happened, I don't know. You can read into it whatever you want. But the Canucks did make an offer to Alex Edler, and he chose to go to LA instead.
And on the point of the penalty kill, yeah, some guys are missing.
Yeah.
It obviously happens. It's a cap league. You're going to have roster turnover. You shouldn't be this bad. You still have professionals doing it. And our friends, Sportsnet Stats, just tweeted, 64.6% for the Canucks penalty kill is the worst in NHL history through 25 games of a season.
What was I saying last week? This Canucks penalty kill is playing at a historically low level. And there you have it.
The league, in the history of the league, through 25 games.
I wasn't kidding when I was telling you this is a historically bad PK right now. If it's trending to be historically bad. And I don't care how bad the personnel is, it shouldn't be this bad.
And by the way, I know we had the caller earlier, Ryan from Richmond, saying, hey, the Penguins power play moves around a lot. They do, and there was a moment where three guys exited the zone. Sorry, Letang had the puck up top, and Gensel and Crosby switched spots, and they both left the zone.
Mm-hmm.
And even just that, it's like, oh, okay, they're trying to do something creative, trying to generate a lot of speed from the back. It was creative, but this is still one of the league's worst power plays.
Yes,
like
it, PKs,
they,
yes.
They struggle.
Oh, the power. Oh, they do.
The Penguins
do.
Power play.
Yes, and really tonight, bad. And they got three.
Tonight, they were just like, yeah, well, let's go have some fun today.
No, it was the 5-on-3s, obviously, gives you a big break. But, yes, it's a bit of a problem. Let's go back to the phone boards. We go to Gary in Maple Ridge. Gary, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind tonight?
Oh, first of all, I'd like to thank the producer for getting me on here. I have something to say, and I don't think the fans are going to like it, but I'm a businessman. I've sold everything from siding to windows to food packages to you know what I've done, and I've done it for the last 40 years. Aquilini likes one thing, money. He likes the fact that you're going to the games, and he likes the fact that you're sitting down watching this garbage. If you didn't go to the games, and I know that a lot of them don't want to do that, but if you don't go to the games, I guarantee that he would scrub the general manager, get rid of the coach, and get some players because he does not like his pockets not being filled. And I know that nobody wants to hear that, but guess what? It's the truth. Thanks, guys. Hey,
Thanks for the phone call. That is Gary in Maple Ridge.
It's totally fine. It's not that nobody wants to hear it. It's just that what are your motivations to earn that money? You know what generates a lot of money? Home playoff games.
Yes.
That generates more money than anything.
Yes.
And so, okay, it's fair to say your fan experience is being leveraged against the team's success, and everything should be in unison in a perfect world. That's why people are demanding this. People want playoffs. People's demands and their passion is directed for team success, which directly lends itself to what you're talking about, ownership profiting.
Yes.
It shouldn't be this difficult.
No, it shouldn't. I mean, and I know people are saying, no, there isn't enough talent here. Here's the thing. I'm not saying the talent is good enough to be a playoff team. I'm saying this should be better than what they are. They're on pace to be a 65 point play, hockey team.
I'm begging people. Just like, go watch a Detroit Red Wings game. Yes. Just no, seriously. Like, yes. Don't wait for them to come here.
Yeah, go watch their game.
Just log on and watch a Detroit Red Wings game. There's not a lot of talent there. They have 29 points in 25 games. They're in a wild card spot right now. But Boston isn't – I know that historically they got the perfection line, yeah. And Boston's always great. They got 25 and 21. They're not a special team right now. Pittsburgh, we just watched them. They struggle too.
They look like a cup contender compared to the Canucks tonight.
Yeah, Columbus. Remember everyone picked Columbus to finish last this year? They have 24 and 22. You go through this like New Jersey. New Jersey didn't have Jack Hughes for 5 weeks. I know he's on my fantasy team. It's brutal. They've got they're 500 hockey right now. It's not just that they're not going to make the playoffs. They're 7 points below 500 right now. It's so difficult to get back into this chase. There are bad teams across the league that are just generic bad. This is historic bad. That's a problem. We are talking about just aspiring to be generic bad.
Yes, and I'm not even saying being a playoff spot. I'm just saying being normal bad. They're being, like Bick mentioned, historically bad on the PK. It's bewildering. It's bewildering.
The Arizona Coyotes are closer to them than the Canucks are to a playoff spot.
Yeah.
The Coyotes, who are like actively tanking.
And that organization is distracted by rumors of being moved to Houston, which is being vehemently denied, by the way. But regardless, that's what it is. All right, let's go back to the phone boards. Let's go to West Van, where Brent is on the line. Brent, what do you have for us tonight?
Well, I think, thanks for taking my call. I think you've got to do something, and you've got to do it now, because if it keeps going on like this, it's just going to be, you already know what the game's going to be like before the game's played. So I think what you either have to do is hire a president of hockey operations and give him full reign. And he, Aquilini doesn't tell him anything. He runs the club like a big company runs an organization. And either you get rid of Jim before that, or you wait till you hire him, and then he starts moving guys out. And I think, you talked about Petey and Besser. They had two clean looks today. They passed away, and nobody even got the pass. Everybody's tight. Nobody's doing it. You're right. Everybody's off. And I think you have to send a message to them that this is unacceptable. And I think it starts from the top, and it works its way down. And I think the longer you wait to do that, the longer this goes on, and the more frustrated everybody's going to get. And that's about all I've got to say.
Hey, thanks for the phone call, Brent. And the longer it goes, the uglier it gets. That is absolutely true, and we're seeing it. Tonight was evidence of that. Fans chanting, booing Jersey on the ice. It's the low point. It's the lowest point of this regime. We haven't had a night like this.
This is definitely the, you know, we've talked about, oh, it's rock bottom and guys didn't play for each other and all that sort of stuff.
From fan reaction to the organization, this was the lowest moment.
Culmination of everything between player performance, ownership, attitude, executive decision-making, and fan reaction. This is the lowest point.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it goes lower.
I mean, hey, you know what I always say?
It can always get worse.
Things can always get worse. Things can always get better, but they can always get worse. That's just life. And the longer you wait for something to happen and it doesn't happen, whether that's improvement or a move, the frustration is going to grow. I mean, and that's just – listen, we do those post-game shows, and sometimes people call us negative. Sometimes they call us homers. But – we reflect the feeling, the mood of the fans. And I think that we do a good job of knowing what the tone of the general fan base is. Not how everyone's feeling, but the general overall sentiment, right? And
the overall sentiment has been increasingly getting worse and worse and worse. That's what we kept saying, like, okay, this is, if you don't make a move, you don't make a decision, it's going to get uglier and uglier. The fans are going to react negatively in the stadium. This is going to happen, and it happened. It's not because we willed it to happen. It's because that's how the feelings have been accumulating.
If I had that kind of power, man, you think I'd be hanging out with Sat Shaw at 10:45 if I could will things like that to happen?
No doubt. No doubt. All right. We are going to hear from Bo Horvat. Strong words from the Canucks captain on the other side as the Canucks Center postgame show rolls on, presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics. Do your feet hurt? Kintec can help. Talk to a fitting expert today at 11 Lower Mainland locations or online at kintec.net. You can grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll free, 1-888-275-0650, or text 650-650 on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Welcome back to the Kintec Footwear and Orthotics Canucks postgame show. This is where you talk Canucks on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
To Crosby, right wing of the faceoff dot, into the slot for Gensel, shoots, he scores! That's the hat trick for Jake Gensel as he scores his second goal on the 5-on-3, his third of this second period, and the Penguins lead 3-1.
Penguins go on to win 4-1 at Rogers Arena over the Vancouver Canucks, who get booed off the ice, chanted. Low point of the season, no doubt. And this is the Canucks Central postgame show presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, keeping you active on your feet for life on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah and Bick Nizar. Get your thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text box, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650. And, Bick, before we go to the phone lines, what is going on the text inbox?
Travis in Squamish says, boys, this team is healthy right now. Buckle up. We're nowhere near rock bottom yet.
That's awfully pessimistic.
Okay, Marty the Red says, okay, positive pants on. What if Aquilini is waiting for Trotz to get fired? They haven't won in 28 days. That's something to keep an eye on. They also haven't had many home games through that stretch. This one, unsigned. I honestly don't know what to say. Canucks have been run by incompetent morons since day one, except for the Quinn Burke years. It's time to boycott the Canucks. That's what we're getting in the inbox. I don't appreciate the moron comment, but nevertheless, we're reading verbatim. The best part, unsigned here, best part about this team is I can gamble against them consistently and have great opportunities to make money. The happiness hedge.
The happiness hedge. Well, I'm very happy at this point, making a lot of money off your team. Yeah, I mean, Gabriel says on the topic of fan attendance, the majority of the fans attending are not Canucks fans. Well, we have seen a lot of fans wearing jerseys of other teams, and that does happen.
A lot of black and yellow tonight.
Yeah, and that does happen, but a lot of Canucks fans here. That was loud. I mean, just off air, we were commenting to each other, myself, Bick, and Cam Barrow, the executive producer, of actually how loud the boos and chants were late in the game. And, you know, during the game, we're talking, and we hear some smattering, and we weren't even going to bring it up really post game because it wasn't really
loud.
There
was about 7 minutes left in the third, and you and I were generally surprised that we hadn't heard anything. But also, it's like, okay, and people were leaving with about 9 minutes to go.
Yeah, so,
and it's like, okay, nothing's going to happen tonight.
They're checking out. Yeah,
so it's fine.
It seems like they're, you know, some apathy set in tonight, and then it got really ugly and loud late. And that fourth goal went in. It was like, good night. It's over. Jersey on the ice, chance breaking out.
The phrase you used, all bets are off.
All bets are off.
Once Crosby scored the golden goal.
Yeah. No, it wasn't great. Not great. Not a great moment. Not a great moment. Like, it's not a gleeful moment. All right, let's go back to the phone boards. We have Gary in the North Shore on the line. Gary, thanks for calling in. What do you have for us tonight?
great show. I just want to say of being somebody born and raised in Vancouver, the lowest point, and that guy that threw that, or that lady, or whoever threw that jersey on the ice, should be barred for the entire life of Rogers. That's ridiculous. You know, seeing the guys, Travis Green even stared at that jersey. That's the lowest point in Canuck history. In the early years, I grew up in North Burnaby, around the Kurtenbach family, and if Orland Kurtenbach, somebody threw a Canuck jersey on during the time, you'd have players going after that fan. That's embarrassing. And plus, you know what? We have some good players.
Yeah.
Times are tough, and I hear a lot of callers going, Aquilini. Aquilini brought it. They're good players. I credit Aquilini by writing a checkbook and getting players here to play. The fault is the process of playing. You've got individuals, Pedersen, you know, somebody says he's having a tough go. You know what? Let's just face it. Maybe he's not that good of a player. Maybe he's not. And maybe Besser, he's a good player, but he's getting slower. The game's faster. Things are changing. You know, Paul Colson is a stud and Garland is a stud. Maybe we chose the wrong captain. Like, you know, ultimately, a captain would stand up and take a, you know, I know you have Horvath coming on soon, but in the last 2 or 3 weeks, he's virtually been a ghost. And if you want to have credibility, good or bad, when times are tough, you got to show your face. I watched Demko today on Hockey Night in Canada, and he's a bright spot for the club. And you know what? He didn't downplay anybody on his defense after three went off people that let goals in. You got a class goalie. We'll build around him. The game will get better, or the Canucks will get better. And for those so-called fans, they're not fans that are booing. Those aren't fans. Those are people that got half-price tickets or given from work. They're not fans. Fans cheer. Okay, I'll sit back and listen. Great show. Bye.
Hey, thanks for the phone call. That is Gary calling in, passionate about his take. Like I said, you can have any take you want on the situation. And I understand, if you're a Canucks fan who's been a fan forever, you don't often remember jerseys on the ice. It's not something that commonly happens. And it's an ugly moment. It shows the satisfaction, but at the same time, I'm not a proponent of stuff on the ice. And, you know, people called me out and said, hey, you're also against teddy bears on teddy bear toss. And I said, no, of course not. I'm all for that, right? And hat tricks for hat tricks, that's great too. But, I mean, it is pretty embarrassing, though, when you see Dumoulin grabbing the jersey and then giving it back to fans. Like, it's an opposing player, go grabs the jersey and throws it over the glass. Like, it's a rough moment. It's a rough look. It's a really rough look.
I don't really... Gary, thank you very much for calling. The idea of fans that are getting half-price tickets. So does that mean the true fans have those tickets and they're the ones selling it? Why is that a good idea? You know, good thing. I hate fan gatekeeping in general.
Yeah, I'm the same. I mean,
it's okay, so the true fans have the tickets. So why aren't they showing up? Why are they selling them to fake fans? Shouldn't you vet who you're selling it to? But, you know, before you get a profit off these tickets, why aren't you like, hey, are you going to the game to boo or are you going to throw your jersey? I just want to know. Yeah. I'm a real fan.
I'm the real fan. So you got to be a real fan to come in. No, I understand. And, you know, I do believe when you've been a fan for a very long time, you feel more ownership over it, and I get it. But fans are not the same. It's not a collective unit. It's not a collective hive. You know, everybody has their own opinions on it. And like somebody pointed out on the text line, fan also stands for fanatic. And the notion of a fanatic is not really a rational person. There's a lot of irrationality in being a sports fan. And it's an escape. It's an entertainment. And when you buy into this greater fantasy, really, and that's what it is. It's essentially like this greater entertainment fantasy, but you're invested in it, right? And you're watching it, and you want good things to happen. And when good things don't happen, people deal with that very differently. Some people, well, they're fine. They can withhold their emotions. Others can't. And others express those feelings differently. And everybody is different in a certain way. But what is clear, the Canucks have to be better, and they haven't been. We'll continue the conversation. We'll hear from Bo Horvat as the show continues. Sat with Bick on the Canucks Central postgame show presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics. Thanks to those listening on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We'll be back with you on Monday when the Canucks play the Kings. More on the other side on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
You're listening to the Kintec Footwear and Orthotics Canucks postgame show, bringing you the most Canucks coverage in BC, only on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
I think it's been no secret. He's been our most consistent, one of our best players all year round. He's kept us in a lot of games. He's given us opportunities to push back. And, you know, unfortunately, it's sad the amount of times that we've hung him up to dry.
That is Tyler Mott after the Canucks lose 4-1 against the Penguins on home ice. And this is the Canucks Central postgame show presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, keeping you active on your feet for life on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. Get your thoughts in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. We are going to hear from Bo Horvat coming up in just a minute. And Ian McIntyre will join us for the final segment of the postgame show as well, Bic, after the Canucks lose 4-1 against the Pens. Now, let's go to the text inbox and a lot of responses. And Gary, who called in from the North Shore, who was not happy about the booze and was not happy about the jersey being thrown on the ice, and said it was not real fans who were booing and fans that were given tickets to the game for free. And, well, let's just say a lot of fans who went to tonight's game were not very happy with Gary's comments.
Nick Pfeiffer says, nice gatekeeping, Gary. I don't tell you not to carry the owner's water, so don't call anybody who cares enough to boo not a fan. Unsigned says, Gary can't tell me how to feel. Jay Holiday in Edmonton says, hey, Gary, don't gatekeep me being a fan. I can boo if I want. I'm not going to cheer when the team sucks. I stood and booed tonight. I'm a season ticket holder, not someone who got freebies from work. And this one, hey, Gary, I'm a season ticket holder, and I was booing until I lost my voice. And then finally, unsigned text, Aquilini paid this guy to call in. Actually, I want to read this one, too, because I thought it was funny. Ownership's patience is like watching a BMW drive along the seawall. What are they doing?
Dan Riccio getting dragged in the text in the box.
Aquilini probably just made a mistake. If you recall that viral video.
Yes.
They probably just made a mistake.
And no, it actually was not Dan Riccio, but we said it was, and then people memed Dan Riccio to no end on social media, so it was a great time. So and now
it was a simpler time.
It was a simpler time. Remember last year when we said, hey, it can be like last year, at least it'll be better this year, Bic, and fans will be back in the building. Well, let's say tonight it wasn't better, and fans being in the building wasn't exactly a good thing, considering how things ended in the end. So
no,
that just kind of tells you.
And it's getting more hostile. You know, they sell the team chants, and it almost reminds me, Sat, of you know, like I know you're a big Batman guy, but you know the phrase from The Dark Knight. It's you either die the hero, or you live long enough to become the villain. And generally speaking, like fans in other markets, I will say what's maybe unique to this market is I'm trying to think of other fan bases that chant sell the team or have this much hostility towards the owner. It's like Newcastle United. That's pretty much it. And it shouldn't get to that level because everyone understands, look, only a select few people can own sports franchises. It's difficult and it's expensive to do so.
Yeah.
And so you hold accountability to coaches and you hold accountability to management. And when you don't do anything, inaction is still an action. So what happens? Everything escalates. And so fans move past the coaching level, fans move past the executive level. They push it to Francesco Aquilini, who invited this as far as diss me when he joined the People Show earlier this year. So they're doing it now. Like, it's not supposed to escalate to that level.
No, it's
not. You're supposed to make decisions before then. But when you sat idly by for weeks and allowed this to happen, this is the result of inaction. Yeah. This is the result of you standing by. And there was textures pointing out of, hey, it's not as disrespectful of what they're doing to Jim Banning and Travis Green, of trotting them out every day to face this all over again, to have to be in their home building to see fans chant against
again,
them.
It's an absence of leadership. And it starts at the very top.
It's a crisis of leadership.
Yeah. Let's go to text inbox. Munn says, not a fan of the jersey toss, but a performance like this on Hockey Night in Canada to a team that embarrassed you last week, boos were justified. We are going to get to the phone boards in a second, and Ian McIntyre is going to join us here too. But before we do that, let's go to Bo Horvat, who spoke post-game and has some interesting things to say about the game. And here he is on the impact the second period had on the game.
Obviously, ran into some penalty trouble there in the second and couldn't stop the play catch-up against that team.
It's difficult to see fans leaving, let alone booing.
Yeah, I mean, the fans want wins, and we're not giving it to them. So,
is it tough, especially after two wins and a couple games on the road trip where you felt good about your performances, that to come back home and not be able to follow through?
Yeah, obviously, yeah, it's disappointing. You know, I thought those last two games, obviously, we were on the road. I thought we did a lot of good things, and you know, again, we obviously weren't at our best tonight, but, I mean, we were still right in the game until we took, you know, got into penalty trouble. And obviously, you know, when you're playing catch-up again, it's tough.
What's going through your mind during that stretch where there are three penalties so close together in a point of the game where things are pretty tight?
I mean, you know, they get the one, and you know, you're still right in. We're still right in it after it was 3-1, and you know, we should have came harder out there in the third. But it's tough when you run into penalty trouble like that, and you know, it is deflating. You know, when you're playing catch up, and you know, against a team like that where they got some pretty good players over there, and they did a good job, obviously, of shutting us down.
Being part of the penalty kill sort of face-offs, but your role has increased a little bit here. Like, I think everybody believed that the penalty kill was going to improve at some point over the season. Like, are you shocked 25 games in that it has cost you as many games as it has?
I mean, yeah, it is. It's, again, it's a huge part of a big reason why if we're not doing as well as we are right now is our special teams. I mean, at the end of the day, it's cost us a lot of games, and it's been a difference in a lot of hockey games, and it was a difference again there tonight.
You talk about the penalty trouble, but even before that, the team was getting outshot and outchanced, it seemed, pretty significantly. What was causing that, that was making it difficult to break out and to transition up the ice?
It was, you know, obviously a lot of execution. You know, we were mishandling pucks and not getting it behind their D and getting on the forecheck. I mean, a lot of our game and why we have success in the past is our forecheck and our ability to skate teams, and we didn't do that tonight.
That seems to have been a problem at other times in the season, though. What needs to change to have better transition and better breakouts and to push the puck up ice?
It's a matter of everybody doing it and following our system and you know, having that desire to get on the forecheck and make a difference in the game, and you know, we obviously need to start doing that.
Twice in a 10-day span that you've lost by that same score to that same team. I know you guys needed wins, and you'll take any wins you get, and there are no easy games in the NHL, I understand that, but like, are these measuring sticks, and does it say something about your team when you are clearly second best against a team like that twice in 10 days?
No, I mean, obviously they outplayed us both games that we played them, and that's unacceptable on us. And we have to, everybody's got to take a look in the mirror and realize where we're at and what we have to do better. And obviously everybody in that room has to be better.
That is Canucks captain Bo Horvat after a 4-1 loss on home ice against the Pittsburgh Penguins. Canucks booed and chanted off the ice this evening in a jersey also thrown on the ice. And Bo Horvat referring to how hard it is to see that. And also, Bick, he also said what?
I was just going to say, well, at least they're going to look in the mirror.
Yes, he did indeed mention that, didn't he? All right, we're going to have Ian McIntyre join us here in a moment. But let's go to the phone boards. We have time to get one more call in. And let's go to Jacob, who's on the phone line. Hey, Jacob, thanks for calling in. What do you have for us tonight?
Hey, Satyar. I've been a fan of this team for the 21 years of my life, and season tickets have been in my family for 40 years now. I just think Travis is a terrible coach. I mean, like... Mm-hmm. He puts out two right-handed D-men in Pullman and Burrows, and Burrows can clearly not play his offside. And this year has just been super frustrating. And I think there's a lot of change that needs to be made. And I don't think this team is anywhere close to being a playoff team.
Thanks for the phone call, Jacob. And it's fair to criticize, you know, coaching right now, too. Everything is fair to be criticized with what's going on. And he mentions the need for change, and that was obviously made known very well by the fan base this evening at Rogers Arena. And with that, we welcome in the star of the post-game show. He is Ian McIntyre. The man does it all. He is on TV, radio, digital, Hockey Night in Canada, and he joins us now on the post-game show on Sportsnet 650.
It's been a while since we've been here.
Yeah. You know who the real star of the show is, though?
Who is that?
Canberra.
Oh, yes. Well,
he's just been named Emperor or something. I don't know. I saw a press release.
With the
Emperor of something. I don't know what.
With a bun?
He's in charge of something. And here he is in the booth running the switches.
So those who don't know, Cam, our executive producer.
Everybody knows Cam.
And also now new official boss at Sportsnet 650. Has grown out his hair. And today he had a bad hair day, so he couldn't let it out, so he had to put it in a bun. So we have been teasing Cam, poor Cam, ever since we saw him, since 5, yeah.
I just noticed it.
Yeah.
That's very 1986 of you, Cam. I know, because I had one of those.
Let's go.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, but not not briefly, because my hair, I looked more like a pirate, you know? I didn't really have enough hair to actually bundle. It just, you know, throw an elastic on it, and the hair would just sort of stand out straight like a pirate's little knot on the back.
With a bow tie?
And then I tried briefly in the early 90s when I started covering the NHL to grow like a little, I don't know what it was, on my face. And George McPhee said I looked like Shaggy from Scooby-Doo and started calling me Moondoggy because it's like a surfer dude, California kind of name. And to this day, when he sees me, calls me Moondoggy.
Moondoggy, that's your nickname.
30 years later.
Wow.
Moondoggy. I've been called worse.
You have been called worse, yes. And Moondoggy sounds nice. It's endearing in a way.
I far prefer Moondoggy to some of the things I've been called. So.
Well, that was a much-needed point of levity that we haven't had.
I've been trying to think on the way over here. Yeah. I'm dreading that we might actually have to talk about hockey. So I've been trying to think of topics. Bic, you know, I played Ticket to Ride last night.
Let's go. The North American version or the
India?
Okay. And you're saying it's very difficult?
Oh, I'm just befuddled. It's like the Canucks penalty kill. Like it makes no sense to me. I'm trying to figure it out.
Did you see Sportsnet stats? It's the worst penalty.
I did. That is astounding.
Remember I was saying about a week and a half ago, it's historically, it's trending to be historically
you're
bad.
You're just taking credit.
No, I'm not. But I'm saying, and people are like, no, it's not that bad. I mean,
you're really ahead of the curve on that one.
No. No, but it's like, it seemed like an exaggeration. Yeah. It seemed like an exaggeration a week ago.
It's hard to believe when you see it in print because the NHL has been around for over 100 years now. You'd think at some point, it's like the 6-team league, there must have been some years where somebody was so bad.
Somebody couldn't fund a goalie with a one pad or something like that. It's like, just score all the time.
I mean, it's...
Tonight, I the penalty kill and the penalty kill has been atrocious and it's where it deserves to be, right? Like that ranking, we've watched it for 25 games. We know a lot of commitment has gone into being that bad because you can't accidentally be that bad.
Yeah.
But tonight, I mean, once you get into 5-on-3s, like that's not really
the sad bit is I didn't even think
anymore.
It was that bad tonight. It's like it goes off a skate, it goes off a stick, it goes off a jersey. Yeah.
Well, I think it was Tyler Mott was saying post game that they had been getting better, and they have. Like the penalty kill, the 5-on-4 has been getting better. They killed the two against JT Miller. You know, that's another thing. Take commitment to do two tripping penalties in harmless situations within 3 minutes. But your team kills both. I think on both, they ended up someone was without a stick, and there's a usual chaos, and I don't just mean Tyler Myers, although that came later.
Yes.
With the puck toss. But they get through that, and then you could just see. When the call went against Mott for the hit, was it Letang he hit in the corner? Mm-hmm. You could just feel, okay, well, that's it. Like, things have reached a critical mass. It's one thing to get through a couple of JT Miller tripping penalties where he's just kind of lazy and careless with the stick. But when you're going down 5-on-3, and I know Pittsburgh's power play has had some issues and Malkin's out, but they still have Gensel. Which is it, seriously?
Gensel. Yeah.
That's what I thought. But it looks like Gensel. You know, I'm a writer. I'm not really a broadcaster, as you can tell. You know, Gensel scores all the time against Vancouver, and Sidney Crosby. You just felt like, okay, 5-on-3, that's it. The gods have toyed with him long enough, and now they're going to do this again. And you know, the disappointing thing to me, not just the 5-on-3s that they gave up the two goals, the really disappointing thing was... it's 3-1, right? And they had, the Canucks looked at the start of the third, they had a couple of good shifts. Pettersson had a good shift and a half chance. It looked like, okay, well, maybe they're still in this. Maybe they're going to salvage something. And then, you know, Pittsburgh basically just shut them down. And it was a third period that we've seen in several games where the Canucks just aren't able to generate. You know, they're just clearly the second best team against the Penguins. They've been the second best team against most teams, which is why they are where they are in the standings. But really disappointing night, considering how hard it is and how rare it's going to be for this team to find some traction. And they, you know, they won the games in Ottawa and Montreal against teams that are even worse than they are, but at least it was something, and they had a chance to build on it, and just kind of squandered that, and now it just feels dark again.
Well, you know the thing is, this is the best they have. The way they've played, this is the best they can conjure up right now, and it's not nearly good enough. It's good enough to beat Montreal and Ottawa. Now Ottawa's won a couple games since, but yeah, they can be better. I think they can be better. But
I would say tonight was not the best they can conjure up. They weren't very good tonight.
No, but I'm saying that they've been trying, right?
Yeah,
like they're trying every night. But this is the best they can give. This is their best punch with this group right now, with this current staff and group. Yeah. This is their best punch, and it's not good enough. And yeah, they're trending to be a bit better, but a bit better is not nearly good enough yet.
No, and you just wonder how bad things might get, because one of the things that was evident on that road trip is that the players were still engaged. You know, Travis still had them bought in.
Yeah.
But if you have many more games like tonight, and especially at home, everything is with losing. Everything's worse at home, believe me. Winning's better at home. Yeah. Losing's a lot worse at home. And if they have many more games like tonight, I just don't see how ownership can just keep, you know, the same people and the same players, and it just doesn't seem doable.
You want to talk about jerseys on ice? People are commenting that it's a terrible thing, and it's the lowest point, and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not going to judge the fan for doing it. Like, there's a lot of frustration and anger. I kind of see it as, well, obviously it's a protest, right? It's representative of the anger, and I don't, you know, if a fan wants to do that with his, you know, $200 or whatever, what do they cost? The Repco with the name bar,
they're expensive.
Two or three bills, right?
Yes.
So, mind you, that could be a couple of tickets. That could be one ticket, depending on where you're sitting. If a fan wants to disavow their allegiance to the team, you know, they're entitled to do that. I just, you know, I'd hope that they won't come back. Like, if
that's how you feel,
if that's how they feel, I hope that they won't come back. I saw that somebody else appeared to take the jersey, which I thought was really interesting, by the way, how Dumoulin didn't let it lie there. Like, he easily could have let the linesman, you know, pick it up. And I know there was only a couple of ticks on the clock, but, I think the players know what that represents. Yeah. And even an opposing player probably doesn't look upon it with favor to see somebody's jersey, and it's Bo Horvat's name on it, which makes it worse.
Yeah.
Right? Because
the captain.
The captain, and he is not the problem. He's part of the problem right now, but we know that the problem isn't Bo Horvat. But I thought it was interesting how Dumoulin sort of just quickly and respectfully picked it up and put it back over the boards, and it looked like a fan grabbed it who really wanted it.
Yeah,
and maybe they'll now proudly wear Bo Horvat's jersey. But I don't blame fans for showing their displeasure. I'd far rather, honestly, with what I've seen in this building over the years, I'd far rather see a jersey thrown than you know, a beer or
of course,
whatever else. So you know, that's a form of protest. That's part of our sporting democracy.
Yes.
You have the right to disrobe.
Yes, you have the right to disrobe. Now, can we discourage
I'm thinking
some disrobing
of doing it right now.
Yeah. Is it that hot by the heater?
It is hot by
you're
the
feeling,
heater.
You're feeling pretty comfortable all of a sudden. Was it the low point?
I'm Scottish, though. If I spent $300 on a Bo Horvat jersey, I'm not throwing
it
away.
No, I get you.
I might put it on eBay
it away to somebody you care.
I'm going
to
give it to somebody.
Right. But was this the low point for the regime as far as fan reaction goes?
Well, it was worse this game than it was the first game back after the last road trip.
The Colorado game?
Yeah, the Colorado game, to me, it felt not contrived, but there were people who were so upset at what had happened on the road that regardless of what happened in that home game,
yeah,
they were going to voice their displeasure. Tonight, it felt a lot more widespread, and it felt more genuine, you know, the anger and the hostility. And, you know, that's why I say it can't go on like this much longer.
No, I
mean, the teams and this performance tonight, they weren't very good. They probably were worse in some of the games that they've lost, but not many. Like, if you're ranking in terms of Canuck performance this season, like the bottom six, this is one of those.
Yeah.
But they, you know, had played four games well in a row on the road, and that's their challenge now, is like they can't let one of these terrible games lead to another. They just have to be better. In some way, they just have to be better on Monday or this won't continue.
Do you make of anything of Travis post-game? He was asked about the personnel.
I'm afraid I did not hang out for Travis post-game, so you're going to have to update me.
Was asked about the personnel of killing penalties, and he kind of skated around it, and then he was asked again, and he basically just said, yeah, that's what we have here. You know, they're searching for answers. We've mentioned, hey, it's 64.6%. The options that they have, are they below par, or is it just doing what you can?
Well, they didn't adequately plan for Brandon Sutter or Tyler Mott for that matter. I mean, Mott has been pretty good, and you can see why. He's so much better. He's like the Gretzky of the penalty killers when you see him play, because he's so much sharper, quicker, better with his stick, and yet he's hardly made a dent since he came back.
Mm-hmm.
They knew that he wouldn't be ready for the start of the season. They knew by late August, that there were some serious issues with Brandon Sutter. They made the trade for Lamico, which looks just like a failed deal now.
Yeah,
and they didn't do enough, I think, to plan for this. We've seen, even, you know, when everyone's available, Travis has basically gone with two forward pairs.
Yeah.
Like, if he could find two forward pairs on some nights, he'd be happy. And you need more than just two forward pairs and three or four defensemen. And the pickings are so slim it's a very small group of players who are being tasked with mm-hmm. this. And then when you have people like JT Miller, who's one of two guys who can take a face-off for them when they're shorthanded, Bo's the other, and that's the only reason that Bo's playing shorthanded, is to try and take mm-hmm. a face-off. When you have Miller taking penalties, and then you have your defensemen like Myers and Poolman taking penalties, everything just reaches, you know, a critical mass pretty quickly, and you just don't have the personnel. So, yeah, it is a personnel issue. I think they should have done more. I don't know what they thought they had in Lamico. He was, you know, he did kill penalties for Florida to a certain degree of success, but he was also on a better team, mm-hmm. a much stronger team. You'd think that they would have been able to find some players to do that. I know they tried in the preseason. That's why a lot of us thought DiGiuseppe would be on this team, because he looked like he could kill penalties. But, you know, they tried Patan, and he wasn't good. They continue to use Dowling at times, and I think Dowling's been okay. But it's such an important part of the game. It shouldn't just be an afterthought. So, yes, personnel is an issue there. Personnel is an issue on the bottom of the defense. Those are the two areas where they needed to plan a lot better logistically than what they have for this season.
Well, and the issue with this season, too, the problem with the season was always they're so all in on everything as far as how capped out they are, how all their assets have been spent, and how there's not a lot of flexibility with the roster, with how many contracts there are on the books, good or bad. That this is the team. This is kind of what you have. And if you want to address this, you got to pay a price you're probably not willing to pay, especially for a relatively small problem, really, that it should be in the offseason. You should be able to address a left-handed defenseman that can kill penalties, having a centerman for depth that can kill penalties. I mean, these are not impossible things to find in the offseason. So
and a right-handed face-off man to play
exactly.
on the fourth line.
Well, and hey, the Brandon Sutter situation is unforeseen, but in a good year, Brandon Sutter can't be relied upon with injury. So you should always bake in him not being available because he's never been available, really, consistently. So that is a big failing. So they're essentially being punished for one mistake, but they're so up against it, they can't really solve it.
Yeah, there isn't much wriggle room for them. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do between now and the end of the season. And was it you, Bick? I was chiding a couple of weeks ago because you were suggesting trading. No, it was Riccio. Of course, we're always
trading who? I might have the same
JT
take.
Miller.
I mean, I'm not opposed, but yeah. No. But also no.
Well, I just think, you know, another year under contract be different if he was expiring. But, you know, Brock Besser's contract's expiring. They're looking at a huge QO. If you're not going to be in the playoff race, which clearly they aren't, are you going to try and leverage some of your assets to teams that are in the playoff race? Like, there's lots of decisions to be made, but it's hard for them right now just to go out and make a trade and address what they need. Even those shouldn't be those shouldn't be insurmountable obstacles to find a left-handed defenseman to play at the bottom of the left-sided defense, to find a right-handed centerman who can play 10 minutes and go 50-50 on face-offs, and if he can kill penalties even better, shouldn't be that hard a problem to fill out your bottom roles with guys who can kill penalties. But, you know, Alex Chiasson is on the team essentially because he looked good in front of the net on the power play, but now he's on the fourth line. He doesn't kill penalties. So, yeah, there's some inefficiencies there.
Yeah, he's a luxury item for a team that really doesn't need him.
And I didn't really get it, and people who are listening know. Like I said, I wasn't on the Chiasson train. I wasn't against it.
Yeah.
I just didn't really see the value when he's not standing in front of the other team's net. What is he adding? Mm-hmm. For you, and they've missed, in my opinion, they've missed some games, the toughness of Zach McHugh, and they certainly have missed an energy that a faster, say, another Mott or Matthew Highmore, who's kind of the forgotten guy in this, and is another piece that they, you know, was supposed to be killing penalties, was supposed to be providing energy in a depth role, and he's been injured. But I think there were choices they could have made other than that.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Ian, always a pleasure. I look forward to reading your latest on sportsnet.ca, and we'll have you on the postgame show again on Monday.
So how bad did Bear's hair look that this is an improvement over what it was? Like, to roll it into, he looks like Norman Bates' mother.
You know, with facial hair, yes.
The bun, the back of the head. Yeah.
Oh, that is outstanding.
Yeah, no, it's
the boss.
You buckled the boss. All right. Well, we'll see if that's going to pay off for us down the road or not.
He can afford a haircut, surely.
Well, yes. Like, I don't think he wants to, yes. I think it's rather well looked upon in the household.
All right.
Yes.
Kind of looks like he's in a band.
I think that's the idea.
Well, that's cooler than what we do.
He lives vicariously through his own haircut. All right.
He's his own roadie, too.
Thanks, Ian. Bick Nazar, you can listen to him Monday to Friday on Sportsnet Today, 12 to 3. I'm Satyar Shah on The People's Show, 3 to 7, Monday to Friday. And again, on Monday, Canucks and Kings. Puck drop at 7, pregame show at 5, and we'll be back with a postgame show as well. Thanks to Canberra and Josh Elliott-Wolf back at the radio station. Thanks to all you for your interaction on the text inbox, on the phone boards, and also listening to us as well. This has been the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, keeping you active on your feet for life on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.